Listen local.
Hello, and welcome to the local edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. We have a great show for you today. In the second half of the show, we'll find out what Farm Arts Collective is doing for Delaware on the Dickens that's happening this Saturday in Calicoon. But before that, we'll talk to Chris Rowley from the Schwankok Journal, finding out what's happening in Ellenville and Ulster County. But before even that, New York has been struggling to provide early intervention services to babies with developmental delays for years now. That's because of a severe shortage of therapists. Now a new challenge. It's been over 2 months now that many early intervention providers have been inconsistently paid because of a new computer software released on October 15th. Advocates say that this will lead to the loss of more therapists and to children with needs not being seen. And that's already happening. Amy Fireisol for the New York News Connection has more on the messy rollout and the impact it's having on the already shaky industry.
On October 15th, New York State rolled out a new software system for its early intervention program, but it's been riddled with issues from the day it launched. Raymond Pierce is the director of New York's Bureau of Early Intervention.
So unfortunately, the launch of the iHub did not go as smoothly as expected, and I apologize for the frustration it is causing our community.
This might sound like run-of-the-mill, glitchy software, but it's having a devastating effect on children actually getting therapy. Marina Yogel works for the Westchester County Department of Health. She says every county in the state is struggling with therapists not getting paid, previously simple tasks taking hours, and information disappearing or in the wrong place.
We continue to get calls from the provider community where their billing is stuck. We have no way to help them. We continue to have staff on overload. It does take a long time.
She says they're starting to lose people.
We've had service coordinators that are quitting, providers that are, you know, wanting to close shop.
Yogel and Pierce both spoke in Albany on Wednesday at a meeting of the Early Intervention Coordinating Council, which is the advisory board to the State Bureau of Early Intervention. Issues with the new software dominated the meeting. During public comment, providers, parents, and advocates were emotional and angry.
I think we need answers. Was the eHub even seriously tested before its launch?
We cannot afford to lose any providers due to funding and computer issues. This will all negatively impact the children we serve.
There are babies behind the data. There are human beings behind the data.
Here's some important background. The new software system, called eHub, replaced an old one, which, according to members of the council and the early intervention community, worked better. The new system was designed and implemented by a private third-party company called Public Consulting Group, or PCG. The state awarded them an over $50 million contract in 2020, and the new software has been 4 years in the making. PCG had representatives at the council meeting. The council's chair, Steve Held, had one main question for them.
When is it going to be done? You now have the breadth of the challenges that we all had anticipated would come out of the sandbox.
Held is referring to the testing of the software, during which therapists gave a lot of negative feedback and urged the state not to release it yet.
In your estimation, when is this going to run smoothly?
What followed was a lot of back and forth, with PCG project manager Rob Lillipop avoiding giving a timeline and pointing to fixes they've made in the last 2 months.
I can say we have a short list of items that we think can contain most of what are the pain points that we're hearing today.
Finally, after Held pressed for a fourth time for a date, Lillipop said,
I would hope that, you know, within a month we'll have gotten through those big ones, but I'm not saying that there aren't going to be other ones after that that we aren't aware of.
Another month will make it 3 months that providers have been struggling to get paid and provide therapy. And advocates say it's another month where therapists will leave the field and find jobs in school districts, where they won't have to deal with payment issues and hung software. Steve Held said that's already happening.
We have people pulling out of EI on a weekly basis. I'm one that hears about that from time to time, not time to time, every day.
At the end of the meeting, the council passed a motion expressing its serious concern with the rollout of the EI hub. The state and PCG both said they're working on it. Held says who will really suffer in the meantime are the very young children with autism, speech and motor challenges, and other developmental delays, and their parents, who are waiting for therapy they might never receive. For the New York Public News Network, I'm Amy Feiereisel.
Thank you, Amy, for that story, and to the New York Public News Network. It's Friday on the Local Edition, and every Friday we check in with the one and only Chris Rowley from the Shuangkung Journal. Chris, welcome to the program. You have a pretty big story here. You have the Honors Haven's new owners are possibly looking to build a monastic campus, which could mean that it could be off the tax roll. It's a complicated situation. If you just sort of take us through the situation, exactly what you found about the maybe the possible new plans that the Honors Haven's owners have. And then just to remind folks, the Honors Haven is a Borscht Belt hotel, a former Borscht Belt hotel in the Ellenville. What can you tell us?
Yeah, it's complicated. A little while back, we reported that the Great Enlightenment Buddhist Institute Society, or Gibbous, had purchased the Honors Haven, formerly the Falls View Hotel, the last major hotel in our little area. And it was a hangover from the Borscht Belt days. It was still in business. It had been operated by a Korean group who were involved in yoga and that and centered in Los Angeles. Anyway, it was sold to Gebbis. And at first, we all went, who is Gebbis? And we've been doing our research and looking them up. It's quite a story there. And now we've learned. Now, we don't know that these two things are absolutely connected, but we've learned through a website that's in Chinese from Gebbis that they are actively, and they're global. Gebbis is a global outfit. They're part of Bliss and Wisdom, which is a large Buddhist organization centered in Taiwan. They are globally fundraising for a new monastery called Kongshan Monastery, which will be Ethereal Mountain Monastery, and it will be in upstate New York. Plans are underway to build a permanent monastic campus. And this has been okayed by their spiritual teacher, Master Zhen Ru, who has chosen a serene and auspicious site in upstate New York for this. That could be somewhere else in New York State, but they spent $25-30 million buying Honors Haven. So why would there be somewhere else? It seems to us this is likely to be the fate of Honors Haven, to make it into a monastery, which means they'll be coming back to remove themselves from our tax rolls, which is a blow because I believe the Warsing gets more than $200,000 in property taxes from the hotel, and the Ellenville Central School District gets more than that, $212,000. If we're right, and if this is going to be Kongshan Monastery, then there's going to be a blow to both of those entities. And, of course, the taxes will simply have to be spread out amongst everybody else. Right. That's basically the story, and it's something that we have to take on board. Now, we've been doing our research on GEBIS, Gebbis. They appear to be in the midst of a very ambitious, tremendous maneuver. Master Zhen Ru became the top person at this for this group, Bliss and Wisdom, about 20 years ago. And she is in the process, we think, of moving a great number of monks and nuns from Taiwan, out of Taiwan and out of China too, and across the ocean to North America. And they began doing this about 15, 16 years ago. And they moved to, first of all, they tried a place in California. That was just perhaps a temporary stopping place. But then they went to Prince Edward Island, which is Canada's smallest province, small province, but densely populated. So they went there. And we're working up on articles about this because it's of concern. There's been a lot of aggravation, a lot of back and forth, a lot of complaints from the people on Prince Edward Island about the arrival of the Buddhists, partly because they feel that there's going to be an awful lot of them, and they're buying quite a lot of land. And they don't arrive just as the fully organized monks in their robes and all that sort of thing. They also bring with them lots of lay people who are fervent supporters but aren't necessarily monks. And one thing these people have is money. And they can, and in a rather poor, backwards province like Prince Edward Island, their money really talks. Or to quote Bob Dylan, it swears. But they're getting in charge there one way or the other. And we'll have to see what happens there. But we also have to keep an eye on what's happening here in Ulster County, because they've now, we think, they bought Honest Haven with the intention, quite possibly, we can't be definite about this, but it does seem to us that it's going to become a monastery. And now we've seen something of a confirmation that Honest Haven will become Kongshan Monastery. However, we're waiting for a confirmation. And believe me, I've attempted to communicate several times with Gebbis. They don't have any phone numbers you can reach, anything like that at all. So you have to email them and just hope and pray. And that's where we're in the hope and pray state right now. Anyway, we'll see. If they do get back to us, then we'll have a chat and we'll find out whether they are going to carry on with the hotel or not. All we can say at this point regarding Honest Haven is they no longer take single or they only take bookings of 10 rooms or more, big groups.
Yeah.
Which says they don't want families and couples and most of the hotel trade. What that means, we don't know either, but there you go. Now we have to wait and see what happens, and it's a little anxiety-ridden. However, the big difference between Prince Edward Island and Ulster County is that land in Prince Edward Island was pretty inexpensive, and land in Ulster County, not not at all. We don't expect them to be flashing out billions to buy Ulster County. It would be a very expensive thing to do. However, they don't probably need that. I mean, I expect if they're going to spend much more money, they'll buy something in New York City, which would be even more expensive. That might be part of the plan. I don't know. This is weird, but it is a very ambitious thing. If what Master Zhen Ru is trying to do, if she is really intent on moving an entire Buddhist organization, they've got maybe 100,000 adherents, followers, 30,000-40,000 monks and nuns. If they're trying to move all of that across the ocean to get away from the Chinese Communist Party, I would think. That's astonishing. That's a major undertaking.
Yeah.
And that's got to be fodder for some great in-depth articles by, I don't know, the New Yorker, the Atlantic magazines with big budgets who can send someone off to work for maybe a year on this, because these people are very uncommunicative. But it could be very interesting. I look forward to that day. Anyway, this is now affecting us, and it's set up in our little area.
Yeah, things are definitely going to get interesting with that development.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep your eyes on that. Yeah. And the full story will be out in the Sean Gum Journal soon. Once we've got it checked, make sure we're not libeling anybody. We've got to be careful.
Oh, definitely.
And the next thing, of course, and before we go, got to say, last weekend, Ellenville had a really great wassail. The wassail went off very well. The parade in honor of Josh Peters, who died about 10 years ago, terrible accident. He was a much beloved person in the community. And since then, I think this was the 10th iteration of the parade in his honor. Anyway, with that, there were events all over the village, and the hot cider was dispensed, and the Stewarts came down to hand out ice cream. I was a little surprised at that, considering that it was under the freezing point. But apparently it all went. Big crowds came out, lots of fire engines and other trucks and things paraded. Oh, and don't forget, and there's this pair of horses. People who go to events around here, they've seen these horses because they go to lots of things. They are the most well-trained, stable, non-fussy horses imaginable. They are marching along in this parade with fire engines going off. The lights are flashing. The horns are honking. There's all kinds of noise. Sirens are raging. And they don't twitch. They certainly don't bother their riders. They just carry on. It's amazing to see. It really is. Whoever those horses are, they really deserve a nice whatever they like.
Maybe those horses are former, those horse and carriage rides in New York City. Maybe those former horses from there for something like that.
Because
those horses have to deal with buses, taxis, and stuff. But I don't think they have those anymore, the horse and buggy rides anymore in the city. I don't know.
I think that's come to an end. Yeah. That's a pretty harsh thing to do for horses, I think.
Yeah. And the news reports I've seen in the past with where they were kept, it was not great conditions and abuse and all that.
Oh, yeah. The history of the horse in Manhattan, like in any major city, involves the death of in vast numbers of horses that just dropped dead in the streets and had to be removed. They worked to death and they died. And then they were, if there's a place in heaven for horses, it must be full.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. Yeah. But the other thing about horses, though, in the cities was because of the way horses eat things and don't really process at all, a lot of seeds went through in their droppings. And that was the reason why sparrows became a vast problem in late 19th century New York and in England and in London and every city that had horse travel, right? Because the sparrows just had a bounty of food down there on the floor for them to pick through. So there were millions of sparrows, and they covered everything in their own excrement, you know.
Yeah.
So there was a lively career for about 40 years for guys who, you know, knew how to keep sparrows off buildings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another of those jobs that just went away, you know, for all time. Yeah.
Well, at least, you know, I said it was a good event happened that in Annville, and it's the holidays, and there seems every weekend there's something going on leading up to Christmas and whatever, all the holidays, and then it just dies, and then it was just a dark loneliness for the next 2 months after that until March when it starts picking up again. That's what I feel, at least, living up here.
Yeah, and so my message to everybody I might be listening, if you're planning on going out to a restaurant, having a party or going to a restaurant or something like that, for that, think about January.
Yeah.
Because that's the darkest time for the staff. That's when hardly anybody's coming in. They'll love you. You will be taken care of really well because there's nobody else in the restaurant. And remember, just remember the tip, because that is a very harsh time. January, February is just really rough on restaurant staff.
Yeah, it gets tough. It gets tough around here. Chris, those are really two good stories, letting us know what's happening in Ellenville and Ulster County. Thank you so much for talking to us again. And we'll talk to you again next week. And we'll be right back. We'll learn what Farm Arts Collective is doing in Calicoon on Saturday for the Delaware on the Dickens. You're listening to The Local Edition, and I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
So ultra-processed foods are this giant category of products that include kind of anything edible that's industrially produced, things that you can't make in your own kitchen if you tried, because you wouldn't be able to get the ingredients and you don't have like the machinery necessary to make that product.
I'm Sabrina Tavernisi. That's today on The Daily from The New York Times.
Historic Calicoon, New York transforms into a Victorian winter wonderland for Dickens on the Delaware, December 14th. Shopkeepers and townsfolk in period costume dazzling with their holiday spirit. Featuring a holiday market, live performances, horse and buggy rides, caroling, children's activities, and more. Dickens on the Delaware, Saturday, December 14th, noon to 6 p.m. Full schedule available at visitcalicoon.com. Presented by the Calicoon Business Association.
Welcome back to The Local Edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. This Saturday is Dickens on the Delaware. It's happening in Calicoon's annual event. Of course, you usually, the Farm Arts Collective is usually involved in things like this. They have a Fezwick party happening. It's a short new play. It's premiering this Saturday at 2 p.m. in Calicut during the Dickens on the Delaware event. Revion Tim Bruno spoke to the founder of Farm Arts Collective, Tanis Kowalczuk, about what's going to happen this Saturday.
Tomorrow, the Hamlet of Calicoon, New York, holds its annual Dickens on the Delaware townwide celebration from noon to 6. And at 2, the Farm Arts Collective will premiere a new short performance inspired by some of the famous characters from Charles Dickens' novels. It's called The Fezziwig Party. It's free and takes place outdoors at the train depot. From Farm Arts Collective, Tanis Kowalczuk is here, and she's also the director of The Fezziwig Party. Good morning, Tanis.
Good morning, Tim. Hi.
You guys are always performing at the Dickens on the Delaware townwide celebration, but this is a little different. Tell us about the inspiration behind the Fezziwig Party, and why did you choose to include such a diverse range of all these Dickens characters?
Well, we wanted to make a kind of short piece because it's a, you know, it's part of a larger event, and people want to, you know, go out and see a lot of different events and go to different shops in town. So we thought, let's just make a really tight piece where we can introduce various characters from Dickens novels, like across his whole oeuvre of like 15 novels that he wrote over his time. And so we created this idea, it's part of the Christmas Carol, the Fezziwig's Party. This is something that Scrooge refers to when he's traveling around with one of the ghosts and remembering happy times and generous people. So we were setting the performance, the party, at the Fezziwigs, and then each character has a chance to come in to the party and have a moment, have a scene, say something, make a toast. And so it's just like a really delightful, fun way to introduce the characters and then to talk about some of the themes that Dickens always seems to go to in all of his books, which is disparity between the classes, the suffering and the oppressed. And that's something that we're certainly not shying away from, and making parallels from the industrial age and the industrial revolution to what we're now in, which I think is the technological revolution and the disparity that's showing its face in this time now, in 2024. Well, so that's the idea behind it.
And Charles Dickens himself seems to play a prominent role in the performance, and you do address those themes that he addresses in his writings. How do you see addressing these messages resonating with today's audience?
Well, I think people will definitely see, you know, when Dickens comes in, he's actually giving presenting some facts that are actually current facts. So we're being really playful, Tim, as we always are with our work.
Yeah.
You know, we're mixing current with the past. And so, you know, at one point, Charles Dickens says, "What do you think, publisher, that 1 in 8 children, school-age children, are homeless in the grand city 100 miles away?" And that's actually true. Right now, 1 in 8 school-age children are homeless in New York City. So we're rolling those facts in a really playful way, because in a way, this piece is Dickens' last gasp. Historically, I learned recently that he died of a stroke when he was 58 years old. And that the day of his stroke, he was eating dinner and he complained of a toothache. So when Dickens comes into the Fezziwig party, he's got this really bad toothache, and he gathers around the table with all of his characters, with his beloved characters, and makes a toast and tells them and the audience that they need to keep their minds open and keep reading and close their lithium lighted tablets and stay connected to their own thoughts. You know, and that's his last message that he delivers before he goes off.
This is called a devised work. Can you explain what that means, and how was the process of creating the Fezziwig Party different from creating a traditional theater production for you guys?
Well, I asked everyone in our troupe, and there's about eight actors and three musicians in this. I asked everyone to create a character from a Dickens novel and come to the party, and then we improvised and we played around. And people brought in proposals for what they wanted to do at the party. And then as a director and a writer, I wove it all together. And I said, well, I guess I'm going to play Dickens because I think Dickens is actually having this kind of hallucination of seeing all his characters. And, you know, you just come up with this stuff as you're working together. It's like, how do we make sense of this? And so I look for the framing device. I'm always looking for the framing device when we devise the work. And so that's this year's, you know, it's like Dickens seeing his characters and seeing his life's work before him and how he makes sense of it all.
I mentioned the show is going to be outdoors at the train depot right there in the center of Calicoon during the Dickens on the Delaware Town celebration. You guys at Farm Arts have done these outdoor performances as well for other productions. How do you think the outdoor setting influences the audience experience and the troupe's performance as well?
Well, I think doing it outside anytime you're in a location that's not a theater. So it's a kind of a surprise and it's a kind of a novelty to see suddenly this story unfold in a place from the viewer's point of view that there's never been anything special there. It's just like the sidewalk that you know and that old train station that you pass by every day when you're going to PEX or you're going, you know, across the bridge. And so I think it's just like it heightens the experience to see a piece of art, a presentation in a place where you normally wouldn't. And it's joyful and it's also, it enlivens the space and it brings people together in a new way. And when you look at that building or you look at that corner, you won't forget it. It becomes a special place in your memory as a citizen. You know, it's like that's what art can do. Public art, I think.
Is there a particular aspect of this performance you're particularly excited about and excited about sharing with the audience?
I really love the concept of this piece this year. I think it's super tight as a story. You know, it's like a 15-20 minute experience. And it just weaves in so many things that I really am thinking about a lot these days, which is just how unfair it is that there's just all these like incredibly rich people in the world now that are controlling so much of our culture and our communications and our commerce. And I just feel like it really harkens back to that, just the days where there was monarchy and like that kind of like inequality. And I just like, I'm delighted that we're addressing this in as fun a way as we possibly can through this and really speaking about it.
Yep.
So that's what I'm really excited about.
And you can catch that tomorrow at 2 in the Hamlet of Calicoon, New York, during the annual Dickens on the Delaware celebration, Farm Arts Collective's performance of The Fezziwig Party right there in the center of town at the train depot. Of course, you can always catch up on what Farm Arts is up to on their website, farmartscollective.org. And you can get the full list of the events that are going on during Dickens in the Delaware and Calicoon at visitcalicoon.com. Tanis Kowalczyk, director of the Fezziwig Party and co-founder, extraordinaire of the Farm Arts in general. Thanks so much.
Thank you, too. Thanks, Tim, and hope to see everyone out.
And that does it for The Local Edition on this Friday evening. Thank you so much for joining me on the program. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. If you ever miss a show, we have a podcast. You can find us anywhere you find your favorite podcast. Also, search our website, wjffradio.org, where we have most of all of our interviews posted there, the local news and local culture. Again, I've been your host, Patricio Robayo. Thank you so much for joining us. I'll talk to you soon. Take care. Lucy, have a good night. Everyone else, take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Radio Catskill supporters include Wayne Memorial Hospital, a certified primary stroke center and a level 4 trauma center. Wayne Memorial now offers 7 physician specialties, including urology and gastroenterology, on its Honesdale, Pennsylvania campus. More information at wmh.org. And from the River Reporter newspaper, riverreporter.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org. Thank you.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.